You're listening to Radio Hangar, where the aviation conversation never stops. This is The Hangar, I'm Tail Dragger. And friends, today we are going way up north. I'm talking about the last frontier, Alaska, the place where bush pilots didn't just fly airplanes, they proved what airplanes could really do. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. All right, pull up a chair, because we're going to talk about something that most pilots in the lower 48 never have to think about. Landing on a gravel bar that's shorter than your local Walmart parking lot, with a river on one end and a stand of black spruce on the other, and mountains, boxing you in on three sides, so there's no such thing as a go-around. That's Tuesday in Alaska. Now, to understand bush flying, you have to understand what Alaska was before the highway system, and honestly, what most of Alaska still is today. We're talking about a state twice the size of Texas with fewer paved roads than some counties in Georgia. In the 1920s and 30s, there were entire communities that had never seen a wheeled vehicle. The only way in was by boat in summer, dog sled in winter, or airplane year-round. So when Noel Wien flew that first commercial route from Anchorage to Fairbanks in 1924 in a Standard J-1, he wasn't just starting an airline, he was inventing the circulatory system of an entire territory. Without bush pilots, Alaska as we know it simply would not exist. And here's the thing about those early pilots. They didn't have any of the niceties we take for granted. No weather reporting, no NAVAIDS, no published approach procedures. You looked out the windscreen and you made a judgment call. Is that pass open or closed? Is that fog going to lift or settle? Is that sandbar firm enough to hold my wheels, or am I about to flip over in the Kuskokwim River? The margin for error was measured in feet, sometimes in inches. Now here's where it gets interesting. The art of the short field landing in Alaska became something more than a technique. It became a culture, a philosophy. These pilots developed skills that, frankly, most modern aviators would consider impossible. Take a guy like Don Sheldon. If you've ever flown anywhere near Denali, you know the name. Sheldon operated out of Talkeetna starting in the late 1940s, flying climbers and supplies onto the glaciers of what was then called Mount McKinley. He'd land a Piper Super Cub on glacier surfaces at 8,000, 10,000 feet elevation, slopes that would make a mountain goat nervous. He'd touch down going uphill, use the slope itself as his braking force, and park on ice that was moving, because glaciers move, your runway was literally in motion beneath you. Sheldon once described his technique as feeling the mountain. He said, you had to let the airplane talk to you, that the Super Cub would tell you when it was ready to land if you just listened to the wings. Now that sounds mystical, and maybe it was a little bit. But what he was really describing was an extraordinary sensitivity to angle of attack, to energy state, to the subtle feedback that comes through the control stick when you're right on the edge of a power-on stall at 60 miles an hour, with granite filling your windscreen. He flew over 10,000 missions in and around the Alaska range. 10,000, and he did it without GPS, without a glass cockpit, without even a decent heater half the time. Just a compass, a clock, and a feel for the air that you cannot teach in a classroom. But Sheldon wasn't alone. The whole roster of Alaska bush legends reads like a hall of fame that aviation doesn't celebrate nearly enough. Bob Reeve, who started Reevolution Airways, used to land on mudflats at the base of glaciers in the Chugach Range to service gold mines. He'd calculate the tide tables and land on a strip of beach that only existed for a few hours between high water marks. Miss your window and your Fairchild 71 is sitting in 3 feet of salt water. There was Harold Gillam, who they called Thrill M. Gillam because he'd fly in weather that would ground every other pilot in the territory. Fog, snow, icing conditions that would make your blood run cold. Gillam flew through it, his instrument flying skills in an era before reliable instruments were legendary. He could hold altitude and heading in soup so thick you couldn't see the propeller, and he did it by feel, by the sound of the engine, by the pressure in his ears. Now I want to talk about the airplanes themselves, because the Alaska bush produced some of the most beloved aircraft types in general aviation history, and it refined them into something special, the de Havilland Beaver, the DHC-2. If there is a more perfect bush airplane ever built, I have not seen it. Radial engine up front, a Pratt and Whitney R-985 that made 450 horsepower and sounded like God clearing his throat on a cold morning. That airplane could haul 1,000 pounds of freight, land on floats in a mountain lake the size of a swimming pool, and take off again in a distance that would embarrass a helicopter. The Beaver was designed in 1947 specifically because de Havilland of Canada went up to the bush and asked pilots what they needed. Not what engineers thought they needed, what the pilots actually needed. And the pilots said, give us something that can carry weight, land short, take a beating, and keep flying in minus 40. De Havilland delivered. Over 1,600 Beavers were built, and to this day, a flyable Beaver commands prices that would make your eyes water. We're talking north of $300,000 for a good one. Some of the restored examples with fresh engines have gone for over $500,000. And that brings me to something I've been wanting to share with you today. There is a restoration happening right now up in Wasilla, Alaska. a gentleman by the name of Kurt Olsen, who spent 30 years flying the bush himself, has been bringing a 1953 de Havilland Beaver back from the dead. And I mean dead. This airplane was pulled out of a lake in the Bristol Bay region where it had been sitting on the bottom for over 20 years after a float failure on landing in 1998. The pilot got out fine, but the Beaver sank in about 12 feet of water and the owner at the time didn't have the means to recover it. When Olsen and his crew pulled it out in 2020, it looked like something from a shipwreck documentary, green with algae, corrosion everywhere. The fabric was long gone from the control surfaces. Animals had nested in the engine compartment. The instrument panel looked like an archaeological dig. But here's the thing about Beavers, that airframe is built like a bridge, all metal semi-monocoque structure with redundancy that de Havilland engineered for exactly this kind of abuse. Olsen stripped it down to bare metal and found that the main spar, the wing spar, the critical structure, it was all still within tolerances. 20 years underwater, and the bones of that airplane were still good. He's been at it for nearly 6 years now. New fabric on the control surfaces, every single rivet inspected and hundreds replaced. The engine was beyond saving, so he sourced a rebuilt R985 from a shop down in Oregon that specializes in radial overhauls, new wiring harness, new fuel system, new float fittings, because this one is going back on straight floats. The way it was born, the cockpit, is where Olsen has done something I really respect. He kept it old school, basic six-pack instruments, a modern NAVCOM radio, because the Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, requires it, and a 406 megahertz emergency locator transmitter. But no glass, no autopilot, no moving map, he told me, and I'm quoting him here. This airplane was built to be flown with your hands and your eyes. I'm not going to insult it with a screen. Now, I don't agree with that philosophy for every airplane, but for a Beaver, for a bush Beaver that's going to spend its life landing on lakes and gravel bars in southwest Alaska, yeah, I get it. That airplane deserves to be flown the way Sheldon and Reeve and Gillum would have flown it. Seat of the pants, eyes outside, feeling the air. Olsen expects to have it back in the air by this coming summer, and he's already got a job lined up for it. Supporting fishing lodges out of King Salmon, that Beaver is going right back to work. I love that story because it's not just about saving an old airplane, it's about preserving a way of flying. The Alaska bush tradition is alive, but it's under pressure. The old Beavers and Super Cubs are getting replaced by Cessna Caravans and Quest Kodiaks, and those are fine airplanes, don't get me wrong, but they're not the same. A Kodiak can land short, but it doesn't make you a better pilot the way a Super Cub does when you're hand-flying a Cub onto a gravel bar at the base of the Brooks Range with crosswind gusting to 25 and your stall horn singing. You're as close to pure aviation as a human being can get. And the techniques those bush pilots developed, they're worth preserving too. The way they drag a strip before landing, flying low and slow over the gravel bar to check for rocks, soft spots, animal tracks, anything that might wreck a tire or flip you over. The way they'd read the wind by watching the river surface or the way the willows leaned. The way they could judge distance without any electronics, just by knowing that a particular bend in a particular river was about 800 feet from treeline to treeline, and that was enough for a Cub if you got your speed right. There's a saying up in Alaska, any landing you walk away from is a good landing. Any landing where the airplane flies again is a great landing, and any landing on a gravel bar where the fishing is good, well, that's the best landing of all. I think there's a lesson in bush flying for all of us, no matter where we fly. It's about respecting the machine, understanding your environment, making decisions with humility, and never, ever taking for granted the miracle of flight itself. Those old bush pilots knew something that gets lost in the modern world of autopilots and flight management systems. They knew that flying is a conversation between a human being and the sky, and in Alaska, the sky always gets the last word. Now, before I let you go, today's sources. The history of Don Sheldon comes from the Alaska Aviation Museum archives and James Greiner's book Wager with the Wind. Bob Reeve's story is well documented by the Alaska Aviation Heritage Museum in Anchorage. The de Havilland Beaver production history comes from Sean Rossiter's definitive book The Immortal Beaver. And the restoration story of Kurt Olsen's Beaver was shared with us through contacts in the Alaska bush pilot community and the Beaver Restoration Network. Radio Hangar is an AI-generated broadcast put together by pilots who believe these stories deserve to be heard. If you want to learn more about what we do and how we do it, come visit us at radiohangar.com. This is Tail Dragger. Go find a quiet stretch of sky this week. And if you happen to be up in Alaska, look down at those gravel bars and remember the pilots who made an entire state possible, one short field landing at a time. Fly safe. Everybody Radio Hangar. Keep the blue side up.